happening. You know, you listen to this.
You are my boss.
You are my boss. You are my boss.
Tuned to High Five, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, New York.
Look sharp today, boys, especially you rookies. Next to the index, close up 90 points last night. We expect heavy Japanese buying on the opening. Permits 1,000. Steel for sale in big tools, 350,000 before convened. Get on the horn with your institution. Report on their appetite. Law utilities are on top priority today. Okay, let's go.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. Of course, you probably just heard them say that, but I figured I'd just say it again. It's 8 o'clock, time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get my brush.
And a good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook here with Emmanuel Goldstein. I believe Isaac is over on the other side of the studio.
Yeah, way over here on the right.
Okay, Laszlo is... No, I don't hear him. I guess he's not around this week.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. Mike's here, too.
Hello.
How you doing? So, it's we're back for another week. Yeah, the radio station's still here. You wouldn't know from last week if we'd still be here with the ongoing Pacifica soap opera that takes place week after week. No major new developments that I can see, although there are meetings going on all over the place and rallies and things like that. So it's good to see people coming out and being interested. And, of course, this radio program remains open to anybody who needs to talk about issues that are going on regarding that, and we will continue to do so with our last remaining breath. And it may come to that, Isaac.
Last remaining breath?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I've got plenty of breath where that comes from.
Okay. Well, we'll see how much breath you have at the end of the show. Anything,
a regular window.
Anything happened with you this week? Anything good?
This week, good or bad?
Yeah, either one.
I almost got blown off the sidewalk this morning.
Oh, come on. You know, the top story every place I go is the wind. Okay, it's windy outside. Deal with
it,
people.
I've got a problem standing up in a light breeze, you know. 45 knot gusts is not the...
It's not the wind. It's all the people pushing you.
Oh,
and you can stop that if you just don't talk. Because once you start talking, people have this, like, need to start
need
pushing
to
you.
Push me
yeah.
over?
I don't know what it is. Even pacifists. It's unbelievable. I didn't think you were going to make it out of the studio last week.
Oh, really?
You gave that little impromptu speech in the lobby about, you know, the Republicans and all that.
Ah, come on.
Wow.
BAI people are the best people on that.
That's, no, I agree with you there. I totally agree with that. But, BAI people amongst... All the other people on the earth are at risk. You heard about this whole iridium thing?
Yes.
Now,
DOD buyout.
Let me ask you a question. Who actually owns iridium?
Well, that was a move. I mean, what, how much did they pay for it? $220 million?
Who are we talking about now?
The Department of Defense.
Okay, well, you're getting ahead of me.
I'm sorry.
They just bought out iridium. Is that the deal?
Yeah.
Okay, who did they buy it from?
Motorola was a primary investor. It was like Iridium Corporation, which went under. Filed Chapter 11, and then the president of the former corporation, someone else, got involved.
Mm-hmm.
They rescued it. They were looking for funding, and the DOD said, sure.
Okay, so for all the people who don't know, Iridium, they're the geniuses that put satellites up all over the Earth and then decided they don't have enough money to keep them up there.
Well, that was poor design on their part.
Okay. Now, here's the thing I have a problem with. There's a story circulating that NASA is stating that the odds, when they decide to crash these satellites down to Earth, They really
will. The term is deorbit.
Yeah, what it boils down to is crashing down to Earth. And they say, this is NASA saying this, the odds of hitting someone is 250 to 1. Now, that might sound like a lot, but when you think about it, you know, there's you know, several billion people on this planet. The odds of hitting a person, 250 to 1, that means, you know, people aren't standing every place. There's buildings, there's animals, there's trees, you know.
There's oceans.
Yeah, there's oceans. So now, for them to come up with a figure of 250 to 1 to hit a human being.
I think that's a misreport.
Well, it's being misreported left and right everywhere you look. So, and NASA has not stepped forward to correct the situation. And they're pretty quick to correct things. Like whenever their web pages get hacked and people say things about them, they always step up there and say, no, that's not true. We didn't lose that many vessels this year. We only lost this many. But the point is...
Leave NASA alone.
The point is... All right, forget about NASA. Who are the boneheads who put those things up there? And how come we're just sitting back and saying, okay, yeah, crash the things down to Earth.
They're not going to be deorbited now. Well, the well-duh thing is that the DOD bought it out. The figure was like 200 or 220 million.
Okay.
But I mean, think about this. The United States military maintains constellations of communication satellites for a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these things were just there. They were going to be deorbited. This is a steal. 220 million to get a terrestrial
satellite.
That's
great. That's wonderful. I'm happy for the Department of Defense for you know.
You'd be happy as a taxpayer.
I'm very happy. I'm delirious.
What I'm
upset about, because that's not the point of this. What I'm upset about is what gives these people, whoever they are, the right to say, well, the investment isn't working out. We're just going to point these things to Earth and hope for the best. I mean, come on.
Well, the goal is to put them down in the middle Pacific or something.
Yeah, but they come up with an odd of 250 to 1 of hitting a human being.
I don't think that's right.
Well, that's what's being reported, okay? And these things do tend to crash down, and people don't always know where they're going to land, all right? I mean, that's something crashed in the Australian outback,
that
something crashed
Skylab.
In Canada. Yeah, they can't point
that would
these
be a
things.
Russian.
They don't know where they're going to land. Now, I maintain that if you don't know how to bring something back down to Earth, you shouldn't be putting it up above Earth. All right? It's common sense. Now, if I was, you know, as an individual, a regular person, if I was to buy something that was, say, dangerous, all right, and then I decided that, well, I didn't want that dangerous thing anymore, I wouldn't be allowed to just simply throw it into a crowd of people and say, oh, well, maybe it's going to hit somebody, maybe it won't, you know? Now, if Motorola, whoever it is that owns this particular...
Well, it's now especially Iridium Corporation.
My point is, if they were to own that company now and they just decided to, point it back down to Earth and fire, I think something should prevent them from doing that. And whether it's draining every last penny they have to keep those things up there or come up with some new technology to maybe point them at another planet or something, I don't know. I just don't think they should have the right to be able to just say, oh, we're going to decommission these satellites and, 250 to 1 odds are going to hit somebody. Probably won't be an American anyway, probably somebody in Africa, so who's going to care about that, you know? I don't know? Nobody's talking about that. That's what bothers me. Everyone's talking about, well, what's it going to hit, you know? Where is it going to land?
Well, no, you can control the swath of land in which the likely impact point is going to be.
Oh, yeah, so they could point it at Iraq, and everybody would be happy, right?
Well,
250 to 1 odds, and make sure it's an Iraqi.
Well,
and Department of Defense owning this now, I guess we can be assured that's going to happen.
Well, you know, an Iridium satellite doesn't have much control over where it goes, I imagine. I mean, it's not exactly a very large payload, so they're not carrying that much fuel for maneuvering.
I'm just saying, this is like an act of war against the human race.
Always.
Of course it is. If you put things up and crash them randomly into crowds of people, I'd say the rest of the world would be pretty upset by this.
You make it sound like they're throwing grenades in Grand Central Station.
Well,
like,
if you got hit by a satellite walking down the street, you'd feel like it was a grenade. I mean, come on, this is insane. This is insane that we're actually even talking about this. More insane than the nonsense going on down in Florida. This is crazy, all right?
Come on.
We should not be putting things up in space if we don't know what we're doing.
Well, Mir is going to have to be deorbited.
Well, that's another...
That's a lot
another
bigger
issue.
Than an Iridium satellite in the their calculations that exist to drop it in the middle of the Pacific.
Well... What I'm saying is, what if there's a cruise ship in the middle of the Pacific?
Well, then...
What if there's a bunch of pirates or something, you know, going out and taking the family with them? You know? What are you supposed to do then?
It's Come a good on, salvage no, operation.
You do not have the right...
You get mere memorabilia.
You do not have the right to drop large metallic objects into the ocean from space.
Don't you know, Emmanuel, that the pirates are, like, in New York pirating DVDs, not on high seas anymore?
Yeah, I realize that. So I have just as good a chance of being hit by one of these things as anybody. My point is, okay, Mir is a good example, and I think that, whoever owns Mir at the moment should be compelled to keep it in orbit. And if they cannot do that, then somebody must take over who can do that. But, you know, you do not have the right to simply... Let's say, the 2600 van, all right, is downstairs.
You're going to put it in orbit?
No, the 2600 van is downstairs. I can't afford to keep the 2600 van. You know, it's got all this, history to it, but I just can't afford to keep it. And nobody wants to buy it. Nobody wants to buy it. So right after the show, and you know about all the dangerous chemicals I have in the back?
Yes.
Right after the show, we're turning, making a left turn, pitching that thing into the East River. All right? What am I supposed to do? Okay,
well,
I can't afford to park it in New York. I gotta dump it in the river. There's no choice.
To continue your metaphor, you have to plow through a small crowd as you drive it off the pier.
Though. If they're in the way, then they have a pretty good chance of being hit, yes. I don't know when I'm going to do this. I'll just do it when I feel like doing it.
I think this should be the least of your fears, being struck by a satellite.
It's not. No, I am not worried. You're mixing up my concerns here.
Okay.
The actual odds of you as an individual is probably like one in several trillion, if that. All right? I'm not worried about being hit by a satellite. I'm worried about this thing hitting something or somebody that is of some importance and just basically scaring people when, you know, there's no need to scare people. You know, we didn't get anything. I saw a hilarious post somewhere about this where they said that this company was so bad that you had a better chance of being hit by their hardware than being their customer. Now, that's brilliant.
I like that. That's not bad.
Brilliant.
That's not bad.
Okay.
I
think we've devoted enough time to this.
Yeah,
but,
I think so.
I'm just saying, if you put things up there, take some responsibility.
Would you prefer to have, like, an enormous landfill in space?
I prefer people not, you know, spend the money to put things up there if they don't have the, the foresight to carry through with it.
This stuff is eventually going to become obsolete. I mean, there reaches a point when the thing runs out of fuel for maneuvering,
mm-hmm.
and it's just going to deorbit. I mean, there's nothing that's going
to
stop it.
Well, I think you should be compelled to make sure it doesn't hit anything or doesn't hurt anybody.
And the answer is to drop it in a controlled manner rather than just kind of leave it up there until 15 years from now it decides to deorbit and goes through the wall of some...
Fine, but I'm getting anything but the sense of control from this. You know, 1 in 250 of hitting a human. That doesn't sound to me like a controlled descent. All right. Speaking of craziness and ominous things of the future, the IRS... Internal Revenue Service. Yes, well, you should shake and quiver when those names are spoken. I got this interesting notice that they send to the various corporations. And, this is not something that's going to affect me anytime soon, fortunately. But it's something that I thought was really kind of weird and interesting, all right? Basically, we're sending you this letter. It's called your year 2001 federal tax deposit requirements. Now, the way it works in the corporate world is that you make monthly or biweekly or even weekly deposits of taxes because of your employee situation. You don't do it once a year. You don't do it once a quarter. You do it once a month.
Well, depending on the size, you can do it.
Exactly. The more money you're dealing with, the more you have to do it. We're sending you this letter to inform you about your 2001 federal tax deposit requirements. You don't have to answer it, but you need to review carefully the following information. Well, they go into all kinds of details, to the schedule and amounts of money and things like that. But listen to this part. This is for the people who, if their total tax deposits during the last year exceeded $200,000. So if you're paying the IRS more than $200,000 in tax deposits...
Not an uncommon thing.
No, it's not. You must make your deposits electronically in 2001 if your total tax deposits during the 1999 calendar year exceeded $200,000. It's mandatory. You have to give them access to your bank accounts. It has to be automatically taken out of your bank account. Isn't that something? They just slip this in here. And I did some research. I looked on their website.
Yeah.
And they're very proud of this, the electronic tax depositing system they have. If you, what they call a paper deposit, if you make a paper deposit, you have to pay a 10% penalty. Can you believe that? For making a paper deposit. For walking into a bank or the IRS and handing them money.
Well, that would be rather amusing. I'd like to walk into an IRS office with a stack of bills, put it on the desk.
Penalty. There's a penalty for that.
But you see, printed on your bill is a wonderful little phrase that says, this note. Good
uh-huh.
for all debts, public and private.
Yeah, well, you might as well print Grimm's Fairy Tales on there, too,
okay.
because it's about as meaningful.
Then I'm pretty sure you could battle your way through that.
Yeah, the battles that take place in IRS offices are always, they always end well. No question about that.
For the IRS, they do.
All right, fun phone call of the week to dial.
Fun phone call of the week.
Yeah, this is from the phone bill. This is, there's a number that you call that lets you freeze or unfreeze your carrier choice. That's so you don't get slammed, you know,
by
disreputable companies. And basically, you dial into Verizon's automated system and follow the prompts. You can freeze or unfreeze the telephone company you choose to carry your regional toll and or long-distance calls. And that means your carrier cannot be changed unless you first remove the freeze. This helps provide additional protection against unauthorized changes to your selected carrier, known as slamming. No cost to freeze or unfreeze your choice of carrier. You can access the automated system toll-free by calling this number. Well, you have to call before 9 o'clock. I don't know why you have to call before 9 o'clock. I don't know exactly what happens.
They're looking to save 5 watts.
I guess. Do you think maybe it's a human being that's pretending to be automated?
Well, that's what, hello? You get with, that's what you get with directory assistance, is a human.
Oh, I
got to
show you some directory assistance. That's
automated.
Next.
Welcome to Verizon. This system allows you to freeze or unfreeze your choice of regional or long-distance service providers at no charge. Freezing your selection means that your choice of carrier cannot be changed unless you contact us to change it. You may freeze or unfreeze your service provider choices at any time. To use this system, you will need information from your Verizon phone bill. Please enter the area code and telephone number you are calling about.
Okay, let's enter... Who do you want to answer? Oh, let's enter NBC. I don't have their phone number.
Which though. You know offhand, but okay.
Well, I know their phone number.
The telephone number you entered is 212.
It's like a free
six,
ad.
6444444.
See how I can remember
it?
If correct, press 1. If this is not correct, press 2.
I'll press 1.
I have this.
Please hold while we retrieve your account information. For your security, please enter the 6 digits that follow your telephone number on your Verizon
phone.
Well, gee,
I know it's 6 digits now.
These 6 digits are unique to your account.
Okay, I'll enter the wrong 6 digits intentionally. Yes, I do know the 6 digits, and I'm entering the wrong one intentionally.
The 6 digits following your telephone number on your Verizon bill are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. If this is correct, press 1.
Yes, I say it's
if
correct.
If this is not correct, if you are calling about a residence account, press 1. If you are calling about a business account, press 2.
NBC is a business, right? Not a residence?
I believe it
okay.
would be a business.
Sorry, we cannot process your transaction.
Darn.
And service representatives are not available now.
Oh, strike 2!
Please call your Verizon Service Center during business hours at 212-890-2690. Thank you for calling Verizon. Goodbye.
Bye. Okay, well, if you have those 6 digits, you know how easy those 6 digits are to get? Have you ever seen a phone bill?
Yeah.
People throw out phone bills all the time. So all you have to do is find this phone number. And it's not hard to get the information either from the customer or even from the representative. I've had representatives tell me what my 6 digits are. No, seriously, this is a true story. You know, with regards to customer service representatives, an airline. I was trying to make a change to an airline ticket I had.
What do they want your phone bill for?
No, they want my phone bill. It's the same mentality.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't have any information except I just knew what the date was. And they said, well,
that
you need...
That day's date? Or
no, I knew the date that I wanted to change the airline reservation from... Or actually, it wasn't a reservation. It was an actual ticket.
Right.
I wanted to change it from one day to another. I didn't have the reservation number, so I called them and said, okay, what would it involve? How would I do this? You know, I'd have to provide this information. Okay, and then I'd switch it to this day, and there's something available then. Okay, fine. So I'll call you back when I have the reservation number. And they said, okay, thank you, sir. Oh, and by the way, your reservation number is... That's how easy it was, you see. So it's not inconceivable that, you could... And I have passwords on my Verizon accounts, too, so that you can't do this. They've told me my password over the phone. I couldn't remember my password. I was like, I gotta, and they started giving me hints. They let me guess multiple times until I got
it. The fifth letter of the alphabet.
And they were so happy when I finally got it. It was like, you know, we had both accomplished something together. Ridiculous. All right.
Why don't they use the verb thaw?
The verb thaw, as in thaw out?
Yes. You freeze and you thaw.
I think it would go over most people's heads.
Is troubling.
Yeah. Now, okay, now we were talking about information. I hope I can do this. I hope I can call 800-INFORMATION. Okay. I see no reason why we won't be able to do this. You're going to hear, if this works, you're going to hear complete automation. No human intervention whatsoever. They've finally gotten rid of all those nasty humans.
Toll-free directory assistance. Please say just the name of the listing.
American Airlines.
The toll-free number for American Airlines reservations is 800.
Okay, we don't need that.
I like it.
Yeah, now you know what airline I was dealing with, too. But isn't that amazing? It used to be that they would say, you know, they first of all, the person would pick up and ask you the number.
All goes on the screen.
And they give you the number. You say thank you. They say have a nice day. And you say, oh, thank you very much. You know, it's very nice. You know, nice interaction. Probably the only conversation most people had in the day. And then it turned into, you know, you had that special recorded greeting. So the person didn't have to keep saying, you know, what number do you want? What number do you want? What number do you want? And then, you know, you still got the human after the recording, and then they gave you the number. Then it turned into the little recording, the person asking you what number you wanted, and then a recording playing of the number that you got. So you got the person for a little bit. And I think the most recent one, you could just hear the person typing. They would never say anything. You would just hear the person typing for a couple of seconds. Now you don't hear anything. It's voice recognition. It goes to some database, immediately gives you back a number.
What happens if there's more than one listing?
I don't know.
You know, what if you're looking for a specific department within American Airlines? Because I've asked for very strange numbers, and the person will come on and say, well, I've got seven of these things. Do you want tech support?
Right,
do you want general
you
services?
Okay, let's try something. TWA, there's international and domestic.
Okay.
That's 1-800-555-1212.
Toll-free directory assistance. Please say just the name of the listing.
TWA.
The toll-free number for TWA, domestic reservations, is 800.
But I don't want domestic. I want international.
2000.
Please.
If that was not the listing requested, press 0 now.
But I don't have a phone.
The number is 800-221. 2000. The toll-free number
stop.
TWA.
This is horrible.
International reservation.
I keep getting
is 800-892-4141. If that was not the listing requested, press 0 now. Again, the number is 800.
How long can this go on for?
892-4141.
What happens if you press 0?
Please go away. Thank you. All right. No humans.
I like
Yet they keep raising the rates, you know? Unbelievable.
On an 800 number? Rates? What?
No, 800. Directory assistance is free.
Yeah, well, okay. That's an interesting story in itself, all right? On my cell phone, okay, 800 numbers cost money.
Well, they cost minutes. It's airtime.
Yeah, it's airtime, right. We've told ourselves that it's okay to charge for free calls because it's airtime. You'd think wire time would be more expensive because that's finite, but airtime, you got to pay for that. Okay, fine. You pay for airtime. But when you call 800-INFORMATION, you pay more because you're getting information. Isn't that crazy? I mean, it's free information on a free service, yet you're paying a premium on top of a premium. And that's okay.
That's not right.
No, none of it's right. That's the whole point.
Hmm.
All right, speaking of things that aren't right.
Hi.
Yes?
No, oh, never mind.
Kenneth Harvey, a Newfoundland writer who has been battling Walmart stores over the rights to Internet domain names, finally won one. This was on December 7th.
Internet domain name?
Yeah. Oh. This is the guy that had WalmartCanadaSucks.com.
Oh, yes. Okay.
It's a special concern for me because of all the .sucks command, sucks.com domains that we have. An arbitrator ruled Mr. Harvey can keep WalmartCanadaSucks.com spelled with two L's. In two previous decisions, Mr. Harvey was ordered to turn WalmartCanada.com and WalmartCanadaSucks with one L over to the Bentonville, Arkansas retailer. The arbitrator chosen by the World Intellectual Property Organization ruled even though Mr. Harvey lost the rights to some domains, he should not automatically lose the rights to others. Whether Walmart with two L's CanadaSucks.com is effective criticism of Walmart, whether it's in good taste, whether it focuses on the right issues, all are immaterial. The only question is whether it is criticism or parody rather than free riding on another's trademark. Harvey may be acting unfairly. He may be engaged in unwarranted disparagement. He may be acting childishly. He may be retaliating for having lost earlier cyber-squatting cases. But this does not necessarily mean that he may be forced to transfer the accused domain name to the complainant under the arbitration rules considering the purpose. All that said by Henry Parrott, the arbitrator. Mr. Harvey argued his rights to the WalmartCanadaSucks.com name, the one he gets to keep as two L's, the one he lost as one, was a free speech issue and not a trademark dispute. Walmart had argued WalmartCanadaSucks.com was confusingly similar or identical to its trademark name. Mr. Parrott disagreed. A domain name including the word sucks cannot be confusingly similar. Now, it's interesting that they found, they reached this conclusion for Walmart Canada Sucks with two L's, but they couldn't reach that conclusion for WalmartCanadaSucks.com with one L. Now, one thing that that kind of disturbs me about this, Mr. Harvey's dispute with Walmart began when he registered WalmartCanada.com. He spent the $50 to register the name, hoping Walmart would buy the name from him. That, to me, that makes the whole thing illegitimate right there. You know, I've seen cases. There was a Verizon domain where somebody won, I think, $500,000. You know, but it's not the same thing, okay? When you buy something with the express purpose of selling it to the company, you know, holding it over their head like some kind of blackmail, I think you kind of, like, lose all credence as far as, you know, free speech goes. You're doing it for a particular purpose. But if you register a site that is, you know, like we had VerizonReallySucks.com, they finally recognized that that was a speech issue because we weren't trying to sell it to them. We weren't holding it over their heads, although they took VerizonSucks.com. They still haven't done anything with that. You got to be careful when you do these things. You got to think a little bit.
You know, how much it costs to get a WIPO arbitrator? It costs like $1,000 or something.
I think so, yeah. Do they charge the person back if they lose?
The sewer has to pay, I think, but I'm not sure.
How about that? My name is Ricky, is the letter, and I am a student studying in the North London University. A lot of people over in England listening to us. How you doing? I recently made a trip over to San Francisco, and I acquired some Region 1 DVDs. As my player only plays Region 2 DVDs, I have not yet been able to view my latest purchases. For that reason, I am contacting you. Can you explain a procedure to me regarding my DVD player in order for me to watch multi-region DVDs? I've tried everything else, and you are my only hope. Well, Ricky.
Now, he gives you no information on this DVD player at all, either.
It doesn't really matter. If he's not able to play it back, he probably has a regular DVD player, which is what 99% of them are. You want to do is contact the people who wrote the DMCA. You want to contact the MPAA. You want to contact all these nice people that somehow think it's right to restrict viewing choices that make it impossible for you to come to the United States, buy something, and bring it back to your country and view it there. It's beyond me. It's one of the things that was at the heart of the lawsuit against us. That DECSS, you know, allowed people to bypass, to be able to actually view something how they choose on a Linux machine from region 2, region 3, whatever. These are restrictions that consumers have not had to deal with before. It's not you know, like we're going out there and whittling away at an existing copyright regulation. The copyright regulations are expanding and encompassing all kinds of things they never encompassed before, and this is one of them. It was always possible for you to. There were different video standards. You could get a videotape, but you were always able to play it here if you had a PAL or an NTSC video player. It was always possible to do that. A lot harder to get the right kind of region playing DVD, and you have to get many different kinds depending on what part of the world you're in.
Well, that's the thing they're not willing to give up, they being the distribution channels. They liked the NTSC and PAL issue, where you can't just, like, throw the thing in the post, send it off to the U.K., and
have a
movie out there.
But that was not because of copyright issues.
That was the technology
issue.
Which they took advantage of.
Exactly.
But they're looking to continue to keep that. They want to have the regions where they can control releases of various movies.
Mm-hmm. But, you see, it's also not about controlling releases of movies, because old movies that have been out for decades are still coming out with region codes.
Yeah.
So something that's available all around the planet already, if you want to buy it here and play it in England, you have to either buy it twice or you know, not buy it here. there's no logical reason for that. Yeah, I can sort of see, like, you know, if they're staggering the release dates of certain films, but, you know, you could do it before. If something came out on videotape, you could bring it to another country before, and simply with, you know, the right equipment, you could play it.
Well, you can play it in the other country with the right equipment, too. You can buy a Region 1 player and bring it back home with you.
Yeah.
It's a lot more.
It's gotten more complicated because there's so many different regions now. Right. I think there's something like 8 different regions.
Seven. Right. Well,
there are two basic standards. There's PAL and NTSC. There was CCAM in some places, but that was it, for the whole planet. So, and plus, keep in mind that a lot of those regions were the same technology. You know, NTSC exists in quite a few places, and PAL exists in quite a few places, and you can pretty much cover everything with that.
But the basic thing is they're looking to perpetuate that technical discontinuity between various regions of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
They're imposing it artificially.
Right, artificially. That's... We have to use, you know, our natural logic to combat their artificial stupidity. More artificial stupidity. Yeah, just flowing into each other here. You ever hear something called N2H2?
Fill me in.
N2H2. It's bringing tomorrow's internet home.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Tomorrow's internet has been away. They're bringing it back home. N2H2 is the trusted leader in making the internet a safer and more productive place for over 40% of all kids online. I guess
isn't that nice?
It's lost on 60% of the kids, but for 40%, it works just fine. All the power and control of N2H2's industry-leading filtering for education. Wait, I read that sentence wrong somehow. All the power and control of N2H2's industry-leading filtering for education is now coming home. Okay. Basically, they filter sites. Now, this person sent us a letter. They wanted them to remove our site from their restrictions.
Why would they ban us?
Well, that's just it. They said, why would you ban 2600? You know, it doesn't make sense to do that. And here's the letter they got back concerning our site. This site, our site, 2600, offers the ability to download audio clips that contain profane or vulgar language. I know they're I know they're not talking about Off the Hook.
Off the Hook is the part I'm interested in, and we use profane and vulgar language.
Well, they say audio clips. Now, maybe they're referring to the H2K speech where General Biafra used the S word a couple of times. You know, could be.
Well, that would involve someone actually going to the site, playing the thing.
Yeah, they'd have to do that. They'd have to do all that.
Playing all the audio clips to find the one with a couple.
And then, you know, couldn't you go to, say, various sites of the U.S. government, like court cases, where the S-word was also uttered? I think the S-word was said.
I don't know if it goes into transcripts.
A bunch of words were said at our trial.
Oh, I'm sure they
were. They were. Yeah, that's part of the testimony.
There was a lot of comedy at your trial.
Well, no, it wasn't comedy. It was serious.
Oh.
But the point is, you could find these words on governmental sites if you look hard enough. They're there someplace. Anyway, the way the site is configured, our site, it is impossible for us to separate the various content. Nice filtering software. It's impossible for us to separate, and they're blaming it on us. They're saying, because of the way the site is configured. Yeah, it's configured. You know, the files are here. You click on this to get them. Good Lord. It has regrettably become necessary for us to categorize this site as, all caps, profanity! Profanity! Yeah, that's our site, profanity. That's what it's all about, folks. It is your local policy, again, blaming the other person now, this time blaming the person running the software, it is your local policy to filter sites in the profanity category. We do appreciate your feedback. Please let us know if you find any other sites you think may be incorrectly rated by BESS. BESS, I guess, is the name of their software.
It's some old lady sitting in the corner listening to various bits and pieces of Joe the Opera.
Yeah, that's the N2H2 website review team. If you have any questions for them, their email address is reviewme@n2h2.com. And these guys are based out in Washington, I think.
Which one?
N2H2. They say
which Washington?
Washington State. Huh. We understand that parents, teachers, and employers want internet content that's relevant and appropriate for their children, students, and employees. Our technology and services provides a safer, smarter, and more productive internet experience for millions of people worldwide. In 1995, the creation of the BESS filtering system, the internet's first server-based filtering proxy network, quickly established N2H2 as the market leader in education. God help us. Today, more schools use N2H2 than any other available filtering system. Over 13.4 million students in North America viewed more than 4 billion internet pages delivered by the BESS filtering system last year alone. Well, if you want to filter some of your comments over to them, they're over there at Seattle, Washington. They have an 877 number, 1-877-336-2999. If we had more time, I'd call them.
I had an 866 number on the radio. Yeah.
866, yeah.
866. This is the first time I really heard that advertised.
Yeah, then there'll be 855 and 844 and 833 and 822, and then that's it.
No 811?
I don't know. Probably not. I think they're going to use that for something else.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. Yeah, we have an interesting little piece of... someone dropped by the studio. We can't really go into more detail on that. Someone dropped by the studio and gave us some interesting governmental things that we're always open to get. You know, please send us things here at the radio station or at the magazine, and we'll do interesting things with them. Now, Mike, you're holding the...
This is the best practices for seizing electronic evidence, a joint project of the U.S. Secret Service, the International Association of Chiefs of Police, and National Institute of Justice.
Otherwise known as the Pocket Guide to Jackbooted Thuggery.
So this is something that you would carry around if you were going around seizing electronic equipment.
About 10 pages, laminated, notebook style. It took 25 police departments to produce this, and it tells you how to seize electronic things.
How to seize electronic? Are you going to give us an example?
Step one is secure the scene, unplug telephone lines, whatever. Step two, secure the computer as evidence. If the computer is off, do not turn on. If the computer is on, if it's a standalone, non-networked computer, you should consult a computer specialist.
Okay. Well, where do they come from?
Probably the place. Little Jimmy down the block.
The place you're raiding probably has them.
Well.
Okay.
And if you can't get a specialist, there's a six-step process for how to turn the computer off.
Six steps. Okay, tell us, because there's a lot of people out there that want to turn their computers off, I'm sure, that need to know this.
Photograph the screen. Then disconnect all power sources, unplug from the wall and back of the computer. Place evidence tape over each drive slot. Photograph and diagram and label the back of computer components with all existing connections. Label all connectors and cable ends to allow reassembly as needed. If transport is required, package components and transport store components as fragile cargo. Keep away from magnets, radio transmitters, and otherwise hostile environments. If it's a networked or business computers, don't even do that. Just immediately consult the computer specialist. If you can't find one, you just lose.
Unbelievable.
You stand there and you wait.
I can't believe how nice that looks. It's something that, you know, it's all laminated and you know, a little spiral notebook type of thing there. It's great.
One of the nice things about it is you need a specialist in order to unplug a computer, but there's a one-page reference manual to tracing email.
Well, okay, we got to know this one. How do you trace email?
It gives you a sample email header where about half the email addresses in their sample header are not valid addresses.
Okay.
They're missing at signs or whatever. When an internet email message is sent, the user typically controls only the recipient lines, to and BCC, and the subject line. Mail software adds the rest of the header information as it is processed and tells you how to read the header.
So basically they explain the difference between to and subject. Okay.
Basically.
That's great. Now, how do you trace? Are they saying that basically the person's email address is the to field and that's the extent of their tracing?
As far as I can tell.
Well, I imagine they bring this stuff back to an actual unit that does the forensics.
They have an even bigger book there, huh?
It's, all right. It's a loose leaf binder.
Yeah, loose leaf binder, hard copy book.
We also learned from another one of the Mercials that in 2000, the first hacker raid on Wall Street happened. And
happened or is going to happen?
There's 3 weeks left, man.
We're on Wall Street. right on Wall Street here, so that's of concern to me.
2000 ITTI, first hacker arrest on Wall Street, denial of service and hacker intrusion on Wall Street financial institution and brokerage house, Salt says.
Well, I don't think this is a financial institution brokerage house. So.
Yeah, I love how they capitalize certain words, like secure the scene, officer safety is paramount. The only word that wasn't capitalized there is. And I'm not quite sure, the little slogan that they say or something like that. Whole thing on wireless telephones, potential evidence contained in wireless devices. This is all the things you can find if you take someone's phone. Numbers called, numbers stored for speed dial, caller ID for incoming calls, other information, phone and pager numbers, names and addresses, PIN numbers, voicemail access number, voicemail password, debit card numbers, calling card numbers, email internet access information. The on-screen image may contain other valuable information.
All the kind of stuff you'd want for identity theft.
That's right. Yeah, definitely. There's two ways you can use all this.
There's a two-page org chart here of the New York Electronic Crimes Task Force. The head of it is Robert Weaver of the U.S. Secret Service, so watch out.
Uh-huh. I believe you had a particular thing to say about
this. The facsimile machine, the picture next to it is a laser copier. A laser printer, rather.
Well, I guess, you can use a laser printer to get faxes, and they probably do that.
I don't think they were thinking
laser printer,
of that.
Laser printers are kind of fun, too, because you can actually dump stuff into their buffers.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's in the little guide there.
They didn't know about that, Isaac.
Oh, sorry. Next version.
Call the specialist.
Yeah, exactly. You guys can send me an email, or you call your specialist, and I'll tell you how you can dump 64K worth of garbage into your HP.
Okay, well, this is fascinating. I'm sure we'll be looking at this a lot more. We have several bits of information here. And again, if you want to send us stuff, feel free. The address of the magazine, 2600 P.L. Box 752, Middle Island, New York, 11953. The address here at the radio station, off the hook care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And, of course, you can write to us, send us email, oth@2600.com. Guess what? I'm going away not next week, the week after that. Huh. Yeah, I decided I just want to go. So actually, I wanted to go to the Chaos Communications Congress, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And that's in Berlin on the 27th, 28th, and 29th. I strongly suggest people go to that. Get a feel of what, a hacker convention is outside of America. And they have these every year. They've been going on for quite some time. Longer, I think, than any other conference has been happening. Okay, this is an interesting story because I wanted to head over there, and I only had, maybe 2.5 weeks' notice. So I started shopping around, the airlines again, to see what it would cost to fly to Berlin. You sort of need them to get places. And drive to Berlin? How are you going to do that? Sometimes I wonder about you, Isaac. Anyway, the point is, I asked, how much, on the web, I was browsing, because you don't talk to people anymore, God forbid. First of all, they never answer the phone, so you have to, ask on the web. So I checked all the airlines, all the major airlines, and you know how much they wanted to fly from New York to Berlin?
Oh, 2.5 week notice.
2.5 week notice? How much do you think they would want for that?
800 up.
No, they want more than that.
1,200 and up.
They want more than that.
17 and up.
No, more than that. They wanted about $5,000.
What?
Can you believe that?
Round trip or one more?
Round trip.
Oh, round trip. That's another story.
Unbelievable. And, I wasn't about to sit down and pay that or stand up and pay that or anything. I wasn't about to pay that kind of money for anything.
So you're going
to
drive.
Short of orbit, I would not pay that kind of money.
So call us a human travel agent and see what they have to say.
Well, yeah, I could do that too, I guess. It's that whole human thing, Avoid the humans at all costs. Well, again, I've used Priceline 3 times now, so I figured, why not? I never used them for international before. Why not just give it a try for this? So I entered Priceline, entered all the information. You put in your city, you put in where you want to go, the date you want to go, limitations, you want to take a propeller plane, you want to take, make connections, are you flexible on time, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a range of dates, right?
No, it's not a range. You can make it a range of dates, or you could say a specific date.
Okay.
All right, so I said the specific date. And I said, I'm willing to make a few stopovers and things like that, no problem.
Stopovers in the Atlantic.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, you have to give it your credit card information first before it goes out and tries to find anything for you. Because the deal is, if it finds something that fits your criteria, you can't change your mind.
Yeah.
Well, you can change your mind. You just lose your money. So that's...
You don't go.
That's the catch. For me, that's a good catch because, they've come through several times before. So... What price would you ask for after being hit with $5,000 as the basic price?
$2,000?
You're a sucker, you know that? You really are.
I'm a sucker?
You're a sucker.
What'd you do, 50?
Buy into this. No, I didn't do 50. I might have tried that. I asked for $400. Yeah. And I got a little warning. I never got this before from Priceline saying, you have a very, very low chance of getting this, a 14% chance of getting this. We strongly suggest you raise your price. And I said, why? What's the point? If I don't get it, I don't get it. So I'm just going to keep the price and see what happens.
Yeah.
And less than an hour later, I got an email saying, hey, your price was accepted.
So they're paying you to say this on the air.
Who are you flying? No. I'm not going to tell you who I'm flying.
Well, I'm not going to put a bomb on the plane.
No, I can't pronounce the name.
It's, oh, okay.
It doesn't matter who I'm flying. That's not the point. The point is that...
Is it out of a real airport?
Real airport, real cities.
Oh, wow.
And you know, supposedly everything else is fine. But the point is,
400.
It got me there. And the best part about it is that I'm making stopovers that are closer to where I want to go first. I wanted to go to Amsterdam before I went to Berlin. So now I'm not flying to Berlin, taking a train back to Amsterdam, and then taking a train back to Berlin to fly out. I'm flying to someplace, getting off the plane, not using my second ticket, and then going to Amsterdam. And I looked at the map.
You could sell the second ticket, couldn't you?
I could do that, I guess. Yeah, yeah, I could do that.
Probably not. Hard to sell tickets because they get your name on them.
That's true. We'll work something out. Anyway, the point is, I looked at the map, and between Amsterdam and Berlin, I noticed to the north is this little country called Denmark, which I've never been to in my life, and I figured, why not? Just take a train up to Denmark on the way to Berlin. So I got on the IRC server, irc.2600.net, and sure enough, there's a #2600DK there. You know how it works on our server? Basically, you put the two-letter country thing at the end of the 2600, if it's a 2600 meeting or a group of people in that country. So, for instance, California would be CA2600 because the state comes first. Canada would be 2600CA. You see how it works? Yeah, so I went to 2600DK. I hope I'm not doing this backwards, am I? I don't think I'm doing
it. I don't know.
I'm getting it right. But the point is, it's really cool to be able to just find a country, talk to people there, and all of a sudden you know people in that country, because I didn't know anybody in Denmark before. So now
cool.
I'm heading over to Copenhagen, and in all three places I'm hoping to show the film, Freedom Downtime, which is now finished.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It's all on VHS and everything.
It's on Beta SP right now.
You have a PAL version to bring with you.
We're working that out.
Okay.
We're working out the little details.
It would be somewhat embarrassing to show.
We're aware of that little complication. All right, 212-209-2900 is our phone number. Let's go to this switchboard here. Good evening. You're on the air. Oh, you know, why do people call for a half hour only to hang up at the last minute? Can you believe that? Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up, please.
Hi there. I got like a little trademark scam thing that I was thinking through and wanted to run it past you guys.
Oh, we're interested in any scam you got. Go ahead.
All right. Here you go. So you got these domain names out there, or kind of like the new, not new, but you got different name servers out there doing kind of alternative name service.
Okay.
For like different .x, you know, namespace and those kind of guys.
Yeah.
Right?
Go ahead.
All right. So say you were to take just a general word, right, and take on like a .web. It's not, like, officially accepted through, like, ICANN and all those guys, right?
Right.
But you go ahead and get these generic names anyways using these third-party kind of offbeat name servers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go ahead and throw a site up. And then, like, say ICANN comes out with these new domain names, like, in, like, 3 months or so, or whenever they're coming out with, like, .webs and...
Well, let me just interrupt you there, because I think that's just the exact reason why .web was not accepted as a new top-level domain, because there already was a .web that was being used in just this manner, and it would have been unfair, A, to the people that had already registered with them, and B, the people who hadn't registered with them, because all these other people would have been there first if they chose to do it that way.
Very cool. All right. Yeah. Yeah,
so
I don't know.
That's the risk involved in that.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was just thinking that one through. I kind of got burned on a very generic word that dude stuck a lawyer on me, and you know, kind of Sunday morning I got served with papers, you know, like, whoa.
Sunday
and
morning.
Wow, they're serious if it's Sunday morning. Yeah. You mean you had a top-level domain?
Yeah, I had brainwash.com, generic word, first domain name, like, ever registered. Was it, you know, it was a site that was basically called it was basically Bell Atlantic makes me feel like a crack whore, and it was a lot of cartoons about Bell Atlantic.
You were wondering about the profanity?
Yeah, hey, I'm sorry about that.
There's no profanity
in
there.
That was the name of my site, and it was out in search engines. You know, I was using.
Wait a minute, hold on, just stop 1 second.
Sure.
You're telling us that you were served with papers on a Sunday morning because of a site called Bell Atlantic makes me feel like a crackwhore.com? Is that what you're telling us?
No.
Oh, okay.
I got served because my domain name was Brainwash.
Okay, Brainwash.com. Why would you get
CIA
served?
Wanted it.
Who owns Brainwash?
It's like a California cafe place.
Oh, please.
Yeah, I know.
I hope you're fighting this.
Well, no, I mean, it kind of went down. I mean, it's pretty much over. Like, these guys came to me and said, hey, we like your domain, you know, let us let's trade domains, or we have a restaurant, you know, we want your domain, let's trade, or tell me what you want for it. And I said, well, all right, I don't really want to sell it, you know, it's kind of like my homepage, it's my email. And they're like, well, you know,
mm-hmm. They basically forced you to get
right,
rid of it one
right.
way or
next,
another.
Next thing I know, I'm getting these like legal papers. It's like, boom, I'm being sued downtown. So basically, it was like lose my house or what? Take like a couple grand and just like walk away from
it. Let me ask you, they're in California. You're where?
I'm in Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia. Okay, so what jurisdiction did they have to serve you with papers? Or what court did this?
I don't even know what court it was. You know, it's just like,
I don't think they have a leg to stand on unless you were pretending to be their company or something like that. A name like Brainwashed, I think they were using scare tactics on you, and unfortunately, scare tactics work most of the time.
Right, totally. My wife was like, what, you want to fight this or what? Just give up your homepage, you know?
Yeah, so, and most people will do that. Now people ask, why do you take out all these like crazy names with, you know, four-letter words and sucks in them? The reason we do it is because so many people can't. So many people don't have the energy to fight these battles, and that's why it's very important to stand up and say, no, this is speech, and we will hold on to this.
Yeah, right now. Well, anyway, so I don't know. Don't go to this, like, San Francisco cafe by, like, a really bad name at this point. But anyway.
Okay, well, we're definitely going to look into this a little bit more. That really was a sleazy thing for them to do.
Oh, yeah, it was. Low blow.
Yeah.
Anyways, like keep up the good work. I'm glad the show's on the air. So
okay, thanks for the story. Very interesting. If
I don't think I want to walk into a place called Brainwash anyway.
What kind of a cafe is called the Brainwash Cafe? What kind of tactic is that?
That troubles me.
I mean, how can you take someone seriously whose name is Brainwashed? You know.
You got a bunch of different gourmet coffees, the Polygraph, and you know.
All right, taking my phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
Actually, it's a Brainwash, it's a laundromat cafe, actually.
What, you happen to know about this? Does everybody in the world know about this except me?
Laundromat cafe?
Yeah, it's a laundromat cafe. It's really scary. How can you put a laundromat and a cafe together?
Well, that's the wash part, if it's a laundromat.
I've read about, this was in something, some publication, right?
It's starting to sound familiar to me, too. I'm getting a strange feeling of deja vu. A laundromat mixed with a cafe. It was like, you know, no one ever had that idea before.
Well, it's San Francisco.
Yeah, that was that, too.
And also, the best practices for seizing electronic evidence, you could find it on the Secret Service website.
Yeah, it's online.
Yeah.
This exact book is online?
Exactly,
I was telling you that. All right. Before the show, anyway.
Well, you know, that's one of the things. We have a few things. We're going to see if the other things are on that website, too. Mm-hmm. And if not, we'll do
something
with
that. There's a photo gallery.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we'll check into that. Thanks. Thanks for the call.
Yeah,
209-2900.
That little booklet isn't like a secret.
Yeah, but it's not laminated on the website.
Well, it's not laminated on the website. The idea is that local law enforcement can download it and use it.
Yeah, right. They can't turn a computer off expecting to download it and use it. Come on. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening. Let me turn my radio down. Okay. While you guys were talking about it, I went to the website, and it's up, Brainwash Cafe Laundromat.
Oh, boy. Well, that's
three boxes of fun.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what that means.
All right, we should not be giving them any more free advertising.
Well, I don't know if this is necessarily advertising because we're basically, you know, summoning up all kinds of emotions here.
This is kind of silly.
Uh-huh. Are they only in California, or might they be opening up a branch here?
It's Folsom Street in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I think some of the brainwashed person needs to go over there and get that name back.
Yeah.
Well, you stand out front with a bunch of little aluminum foil beanies.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know why someone wants to go to a cafe laundromat. Okay,
guys. All right. Thanks for calling. You know, speaking of weird cafes, Mike, you and I went to this place last week. Scared the hell out of me. In the middle of Times Square is this new, I don't know if you can call it an internet cafe. They have, you'd love it, Isaac. They have something like,
why would I love it?
I don't know. You love this corporate cloning type of thing that's going on out there.
Oh,
they have 900 terminals, like at little booths, all looking the same. And they're crowded, too. At 1 in the morning, they were packed with people.
Maybe I would like that. They got little walls and cubbies like the library.
Yeah.
You can see what everyone's doing.
Yeah, that's the other cool thing about it. You can watch everybody. You can go upstairs. They have two floors and look down with your binoculars, and nobody bothers you, and see what people are. And, you know, people are just cruising the
web. Well, people are going to be stupid enough to do their banking from something like that.
Here's the thing. You know how much it costs? It costs $1 for 3 hours.
Cool.
Well, it's going to go up once they hook
you. I imagine it's going to go up quite. I mean, think about the bandwidth. First of all, the most expensive real estate you could possibly imagine, the middle of Times Square, 900 terminals, right?
Well, they're operating at a loss.
I think they might be, yeah. Because I don't think those cookies and coffee they sell in the front are really covering all that.
Their revenue stream is everything in there is branded with ads.
Right, of course.
Yeah. Well, then that, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen their books, but that's got to be their primary source of income.
Well, the point is, it's anybody running an internet cafe has no chance against this kind of a thing. I mean, they're being bankrolled by the Pope or something. I don't know. Someone's behind this. It's got a lot of money. And it's fun to go in and play. I mean, we crashed the machine in about 30 seconds, but it wasn't intentional. It never is intentional. No, you press certain buttons, and they just crash. And if it's a Mac, it takes 5 seconds. But that's, you know, and I'm not speaking out against any type of computer. I'm just saying that's what happens, all right? When they're up, yeah, I can have lots of fun with them. But they get them to crash really fast. Anyway, so these things are popping up all over the world. The funny thing is, do you remember the name of them? I don't remember their name.
I can tell you their name.
Oh, you remember the
name?
Yeah,
it's Easy Everything.
Easy Everything, okay. You see,
they're in Times Square?
Advertising is lost on me. I can watch a commercial 50 times, and I can remember the commercial, but I don't know what they're selling. And I can go inside a place and not know what the name is. You know, so that's sort of a protection, you know, a sanity check.
A little shield, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're in Times Square.
I got to check that out.
Maybe we'll take you after the show.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, you know, we could have a little meeting after the show. All our listeners can meet in Easy Everything.
I'm not buying the cookies, though.
Yeah. I don't think they'd like that either. No, that's just a little, like, offhanded threat there. We could do that. Because they're open 24 hours, too. 24 hours a day.
That would be one of the only things in Times Square that's open 24 hours anymore, then.
Is that true?
Things you ever walk through there at 3 a.m.? Dead.
Hmm. Oh, well. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, good evening. I have a question about cell phones. I was wondering why they, when you have cell phones, some of them echo, and they sound very distant, but the echo. Mm-hmm. Is that a problem with all cell phones?
You're using a Sprint phone, aren't you?
I'm not on a cell phone now.
No, but when this happens, you're using Sprint, aren't you?
No.
You're not?
It's a Mitsubishi G310 VoiceStream.
VoiceStream, okay. I hadn't heard of that on VoiceStream. I hear it all the time on Sprint. But basically,
Sprint.
It's I don't know the technical reason for it.
Echo.
But yeah, I mean the echo is bouncing off the transmitter, which
because people say I sound like I'm echoing or something in the echo room.
Usually you hear the echo. The person you're talking to doesn't. But sometimes the person you're talking to gets what's known as robot voice. Yeah, and that's very annoying. And you don't know you sound like a robot when you're talking to them.
It could be any number of things. It's probably a compression artifact.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know.
It's really – so what my question to you is there any perfect cell phone as far as that goes or you can't
I haven't found any. I mean, I know that you're asking for trouble if you buy a Samsung phone. I know that much because I bought two of them. But the phone is only as good as the service. And no matter what kind of phone you use on the Sprint network, you're still going to have limitations of the Sprint network.
Which is why I encourage everyone to just drop cell phones, get their amateur radio licenses, and head out there and get
the
on the
handband.
The
problem with that, Isaac, is
you don't echo.
You're not allowed to talk about a lot of things on amateur radio. They control the speech.
You can't talk business.
Yeah. Well, okay, great. You can't talk business. You can't use bad words. You know, that profanity thing comes back to haunt you yet again. You know, so there's all kinds of, like, you know, restrictions, and it's not exactly free speech. That's the thing. And yeah, you know.
Well, I think people should do it anyway.
I think there's too much education. Too many cell phones around, obviously. You know, they ban cell phones in cars out by Suffolk County, and they want to do it in Nassau, they want to do it in Manhattan, they want to do it in Rockland.
I can't drive east anymore.
How can they possibly enforce this? You know, if I've got a brick up against my head, is that illegal now? Can I not do? I mean, how are they going to know I'm on the phone? Can I hold my phone to my ear and not make a phone call?
Well, that was like somebody I know who was driving through Pennsylvania, had their cell phone clipped up to their visor.
Uh-huh.
Cop pulled him over, thought it was a radar detector.
Oh, that's
no,
funny.
No, it's my phone, really. It takes it out, call someone.
Good evening. You're on the air. Last call.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Oh, couple things. My friend has a cell phone. It's a Nokia 8160, I think.
Uh-huh.
And that is the best cell phone.
Okay.
He was getting reception in the subway. So
what? That depends on the what service was he using?
AT&T.
AT&T. Well, maybe AT&T has transmitters in the subway.
I got a ticket for using a cell phone, and you know how they catch you? Bike officers.
Yeah.
They pull up alongside of you, and they look in, and they'll check everything.
Really? Well, I've developed a method of driving with my phone on, you know, without, you know, it looking like it's on, you know.
You're getting real slick now.
How can they prove you're on the phone if you say you weren't on the phone? They say the only thing that you're allowed to do is call the police on the phone while you're driving.
That
just means anytime I pull over, I'm going to have to call the cops, you know, and hang up immediately. And then
you're
say,
pulling me over.
Look, I just called the cops. See, that's what I was doing. I was reporting, a UFO or something.
And if you
want to
keep going at it, they can get the bill from the company and say, oh, you did make a call at this time.
Yeah, well, they're going to have to go to a lot of trouble.
Yeah, well.
Well, that's our show for this week. We'll be back again next week, hopefully, with all kinds of interesting beats and tones and things like that. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you then. Good night.
We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Only the bombs were the best, best for worse. Christmas Day, Adam, IFCO, WBAI Radio, The Point, Black Mia Force, and the Mega Ever Student Government will feed the homeless and people in need in all five boroughs and Newark, New Jersey. To accomplish this feat, we'll be turning words into food at a benefit poetry reading on Wednesday, December 20th from 8 p.m. until at the Wetlands, located at 161 Hudson Street in Manhattan. Join the word wizard, Abby O'Doom of The Last Poets, a